Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Fembrain.
Fembrain.
But before we get into it, over on Insane in the Membrane this week, I'm talking to Russell Hicks, and here's a little taster of it.
Stand-up is all about confidence, and it's so much a mental game, almost to an annoying degree, that the guy who believes in himself the most and has the best attitude, he'll do the best on stage. I've seen it a million times. Like, if you go up there with just this, like, this actual genuine love in your heart, you know, maybe you're just having a great day, you're invincible.
Yeah, true.
You're just invincible up there. And I remember I was having trouble with that because just for whatever reason, you know, like, I'm a perfectionist too. So you get off stage and no matter what, you just, I did that wrong. Oh, why did I hold the mic?
I've seen you do that. We've gigged together and you've smashed it. And then you come off and you're like, yeah, but no, that should have.
Like, see, that's the thing. We think we're not just performing at a comedy club. We are on a mission to be these great comedians. And we're on this journey. These people are just, this is just what they're doing.
You're just part of their evening.
Before they go to all bar one.
So that's Russell Hicks over on Insane in the Membrane right now. Here we are, Insane in the Fembrain. Hope you're well. Hope you're doing okay. Again, I'm going to say this. I really enjoy doing these. I do enjoy doing these. It's just nice to have conversations with women. I don't feel like an idiot. I'm in a space where I'm able to ask questions, you know, that I wouldn't necessarily feel I could ask outside in the real world. It's really nice to have all the guests that have been on. A massive thank you to every single guest that's agreed to come on and has been on and smashed it. It's been amazing. Really appreciate everything you did and coming on and helping me learn a thing or two. Because you don't realise how you'd like to think that you're quite open-minded and you're a well-rounded dude. And then you speak to people and you go, I've got so much to learn still. But you know, we never stop learning, do we? We're always learning. There's no destination. It's just the journey. Until you're not journeying anymore. But we don't want to talk about that, do we? Not especially at the moment with all this shit going on. Mad old times. I hope you lot are all right out there. Second lockdown's about to begin, or has begun. It's weird looking out the window and things are shut. I don't know. It has to happen. I know what we're doing. I know what we're doing is beneficial. And we could get into all the arguments about it should have been done earlier and blah, 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 but it wasn't, and now we're here. So all we can do is just make the best of it. And hopefully you lot are all right listening to this. If anyone isn't, please feel free to drop me a line. Drop me a message on Insane in the Fembrain or Insane in the Membrane on the old Instagrams there. I might not reply straight away because I forget to look. I'm so shit at admin. It's not because I'm ignoring anybody. I just forget, and I just get lost in my own bullshit. I realise, you know, I'm like, I've got so much to do. Then I realise I've been staring at the ceiling for 5 hours. Get lost in my own head. But I will get back to you. So if anyone's struggling, especially at the moment, drop me a line and we'll have a chat. Honestly, all right? Because, you know, there's nothing worse than you and anyone sitting there and thinking that they've got no one to talk to. And even we could just talk bollocks for a bit, you know. Just drop me a line and I'll be happy to speak to you and have a chat, you know. We're in this together, after all. My guest this week is the fantastic actor and author Helen Rutter. Helen Rutter is the wife of Rob Rouse, comedian Rob Rouse, who was on the show a few weeks ago. But not only that, she's not that. It's not just all she is. She's a fantastic woman. I met her, I think it was last year. I mean, we talked about that in the podcast. It was last year when she was doing a show with Rob. Fantastic show. We talk about it in this episode. It was a great show that Jade and I went to. And she's just a wonderful person. She's just really easy to talk to. Amazing energy. And it was just great fun to talk to her. She's lovely. And we talk about her new book that's coming out. You'll hear all about that. And again, once you hear the episode, if anyone has got any questions or anything like that, then again, drop me a line and we'll see. We can help you out. We're going to put some links in as well, because the book is a deal. The main character in it has a stammer, and so that's what we were talking about a bit at the time. So I know some people might not know. You know, they might have some problems. They might be dealing with some stuff, and so we'll put some links up for anyone that needs any help. So I hope you enjoy this episode. It's a really nice one. They're all really nice, but I like this one. She's so lovely. So coming up in just a minute, Helen Rutter.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Here we are. How's that looking?
For me?
Yeah.
For me, you're looking marvellous. You look beautiful.
There you are. Oh, man, it's good to see you.
Yeah, you too. It's really nice to see you.
Yeah, we don't really do it like this with videos. I think we should start. I think it's
a funny
forward.
One, isn't it? I think it is nice to see people's faces, but there's a... you get Zoom out, you just get over it, don't you? And then actually just an old phone call can be quite nice every now and again, where you don't have to look at anybody.
I'm a bit, I don't really like talking on the phone. So I'm happy to either do this for a bit or text. Just text me. There's been people lately who go, just give me a call. I want to talk to you about something. I'm like, just text me and I'll say yes or no.
Yeah, I know. I'm not much of a... I've got better at talking on the phone in the last 8 months, but yeah, no, I'm a bit the same. Just avoid it. Just like, I'll just let them leave a message and see what they want, and then I'll decide.
Yeah. It's just, come on. I am getting better at it, but I don't know. And it was funny with the first Zoom ones. I was a bit, even though we perform, you know, you're an actor and Rob's a comedian and an actor, and we've done stuff, but I don't know, for some reason, sitting in front of the camera like this, I was like, hello. It's like,
yeah.
You know, it was weird.
It is weird. It leaves you afterwards, I find. I've had to do a few Zoomy, like kind of worky Zoomy things. And afterwards, I'm fine as it's going on. And then afterwards is you're left with quite a strange feeling after a Zoom call, I think, where you kind of go over it in your head more than you would in any other form, like whether it be on the phone or in real life. And you're just left with this weird feeling of, was that okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, did I talk too much or not enough? Or like, who am I?
Yeah, there's no kind of feedback. There's no like, you know, well done, that was great. You kind of just shut your laptop and you're in your...
Yeah.
You go, okay, all right, well... And half the time I've been doing it, I've got a shirt on, but I've got shorts on underneath.
Exactly. Odd, feet up with slippers on, yeah. And that's it. As soon as you shut it and then you're left with the silence in your room, you're like, oh, that wasn't even real. It feels really odd.
That's what it feels like. Yeah. But you and Rob, you're doing all right?
Yeah, we're doing all right. Yeah. We're doing all right. I mean, it's a... an odd day on an odd week of an odd year and all of that. And yeah. But we're getting up and walking the dogs and every day and keeping going and doing some creative stuff, which is just kind of what keeps you going, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah. Well, you do a lot together, don't you? Like you do a podcast, or you're doing a podcast, and then you did your show in Edinburgh together last year. It was last year? Year before?
It was last year. Yeah, it feels like a different lifetime, doesn't it? But yeah, that's when I met you guys. That was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, such a good show.
Oh my God. That was one of the best ways to meet people, wasn't it? Because I'd never met you before.
Yeah.
And the first time was when Jade started heckling. I was heckling Rob. And Jade and you knew, didn't you?
Yeah, I was
part of the show. But Jade didn't know that I was actually part of the show. And so she starts heckling me for heckling Rob. And I'm telling her to shut up and she's telling me to shut up. And then afterwards she realised it was me. It was very funny.
It was admirable that she decided she was going to defend Rob against this mad woman in the audience.
It was very impressive. She was a good friend. She proved herself.
It was really funny. But it's good that you can work together. Like Jade and I work really well together on stuff. We might not get on all the time, but we work well when we're doing stuff. And that's good to see you and Rob.
Yeah, it's really important for us. I think when we don't do something for a long time together, we feel it drifting. It really keeps us... Yeah. Glued together, actually, that kind of creative side. It's lovely. And actually, we've got on throughout our creative stuff when we've written shows, because that was our second Edinburgh show together. When we first started doing those things, it was a bit nerve-wracking. It felt like a big risk because you're just thinking, God, this is my husband and father of my kids. And I know how passionate creative stuff can really press your buttons and make you quite... it can be quite emotive, can't it? So I did think, God, this is a risk. This could be really awful if we have a difference of opinion. But actually, we got on so well throughout those shows. It was brilliant.
Yeah, you do. When we were hanging around with you afterwards, just you and the kids, and we're eating and stuff like that. It's just nice. It was lovely. There's a real. You've got a nice unit, which I think is really important. Especially at the moment.
Yeah, the kids are, it is. It's keeping me together at the moment, having the kids and Rob. But yeah, the kids, God, they missed Edinburgh this year and they've already started talking about the fact Edinburgh might not happen next year.
God,
absolutely love it so much. Fingers crossed that there's something to go to next year.
I'm sure it'll be all right. But you've been busy anyway. I mean, you've got your... No, Rob's already been on. We talk about Rob. We've already done that. He was on last week. But you got, you're an actor and an author in your own right. You know, you've got your own shit going on. And I've read your book.
Oh, have you read it?
Yeah. And it's brilliant. Aww. It's lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's really nice. The thing is with me, with reading, a book needs to grab me straight away, otherwise I'd get bored. I'd just wander off. And I was like, I'm just going to flick through, then I've got a vague idea of what we're going to talk about. But I just read it, and it's really nice. It's a really nice little story.
Oh, bless you. I tell you what, for people who aren't readers, reading kids' books is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because there's something so pure and simple and... Like, there's depth to what authors are trying to say when they're talking to kids, because it's important, isn't it? When you're talking to a kid, you want to talk about something that's important and that, you know, they're going through massive changes. So you are talking about big issues, but in such a simple way. And I think that whenever I get stuck with reading, I go back to reading kids' books. Me and Lenny have a little book group and I'm like, oh, Len, I can't be bothered with anything too, you know, too difficult. Can you give me something that's going to make me cry, make me laugh, and then I'm sorted.
I think that's the thing. We assume that just because they're kids, they don't have a handle on what's really happening. You know, kids are more astute than we give them credit, you know?
Oh.
And, yeah.
They're so sensitive. And... It's interesting, actually. At the moment, I'm realising that, you know, I'm packing them off to school every day while the madness is going on. And the other day, I'm sending my son in And he had a bit of a wobble, and it's kind of like, of course he's going to have a wobble. He's meant to be wearing a mask every time he goes into a shop. We're not allowed out of the house or to see a mate, but yeah. I'm sending him off on a coach where none of the kids are wearing masks, and he's off in a school where they're all coughing on each other. Of course he's going to be wobbly about that. Yeah. We're giving him completely mixed messages, and they're sensitive, and they understand that, you know, they're really sensitive to danger and to anxiety and all of those things. And so it's important to recognise that, actually, and not to just think that they'll be all right and just keep ploughing on and think that, you know, it's so important that they get an education, obviously, but it's also really important to understand that educating them at the moment might be quite scary.
Yeah. I was walking back to my car a few weeks ago, and there was a woman, there was a kid, and she'd fallen off the slide, and she was coming back and crying to her mum, and she was rubbing her leg, and she was like, oh, am I going to die? Am I going to die? And you're like, oh, God, you know, these kids, you know, when I was a kid, it was like, oh, what do you know? You're just a kid. But kids do know what's going on, and they do worry, and they do, you know, if you don't explain to them, if you don't talk to them, then they're going to make their own minds up, you know, and that's going to just send them into a spiral.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and make their own minds up about and come up maybe with a conclusion that's wildly, you know, like you say, like all of a sudden, if somebody has a cold, does that mean they're going to die? And because this is mad, really quite powerful stuff, isn't it, that we're going through? So they're going to make all sorts of assumptions that aren't necessarily real.
Yeah. Well, when you look at people that were around in the Second World War, like they were all, like my nan, like they were kids back then, but... You know, they were when you look back and you see the pictures of them, they all look like grown-ups, even though they were kids, because they were going through such a heavy thing. And it's like this now. This is such a heavy thing. Like we're adults, so we find a way to deal with stuff, don't we? We're gonna go, we can sort of see it, you know, for what it is. But a kid can't. You know, all they see is the news and the panic and the fear and the. And that's going to send them over the edge. And so that's why it's good that you're having these conversations, you know, with your kids. You're recognising that with your kids. I think that's important.
Yeah, I think it's really important, because I think that actually, so before we had a little wobble where we could acknowledge what it was and see it for what it was, obviously there was loads of stuff before that built up to that point that he would never have been able to understand. It was coming out in a different way. He was just being mean to his sister, or, you know, it comes out in all sorts of different ways, doesn't it? And so actually it can go on for ages before anybody acknowledges it. And the main thing is to get your kids to kind of be able to see their emotions for what they are and actually go, okay, that's what that is. And that's why I was probably... being a bit stroppy, or that's why I was, whatever it is, but that's why I've been biting my nails or not sleeping or having whatever. And so it's just connecting those dots, isn't it? And it's hard enough as an adult to connect it and go, oh, it's because I'm anxious. That's why I'm being a cow, or that's why I'm, you know, it's just anxiety, or it's just stress or whatever.
It's being able to, it's like the other day, Jade had something going on. She had a thing going that she had to do the next morning, and I was talking to her, and she was being a bit shitty, and I was just like, right, you're projecting because you're anxious about tomorrow, and she wouldn't have it. Then she's going, you fucking prick, how dare you? You fucking patronise me. I go, this is what this is. We've been here before. And then the next day after the thing had happened, she's like, yeah, you were right. I'm really sorry. And I don't even get into it now. I'm like, because it's nice to be able to turn around and go, I've literally just done it. I've just messaged someone. I go, I'm really sorry if I was a bit of a dick yesterday. And they've gone, no, you were fine. You were fine. I'm like, I was just a bit all over the place. My head wasn't, you know, it's nice, isn't it? I think more people should be able to turn around and go, yeah, I was a bit of a prick.
Yeah.
And this is why.
You think. You know? At our age, you kind of think that you'd be on top of it, but it still sneaks up, doesn't it? You still end up acting it out in a different way and not accepting it and going, no, that's not, it's not because I'm stressed, or it's not because I'm hormonal, or it's not because I'm this. It's you know, because you want to feel like your feelings are authentic and not based on something else, but they still are authentic, even though they are based on something else. It's like you can still... be real. You can still be annoyed at somebody, and they can still be annoying, even though you are also stressed, and that's why it's coming out in the way it is. But yeah, I mean, it's surprising, isn't it, that even at the age of 40, you're still like, oh, that's why I was behaving like that, isn't that? And even though it's happened 1,000 times.
Yeah. I've only just started doing it. I've only just started turning around and going, I was... my blood sugar levels weren't great yesterday when I saw you, and I'm 48. I've only just started doing it, or understanding. I was talking to Russell Hicks, and we were talking about empathy, and understand that sometimes people are going through some shit that you don't know about, and so that makes them sort of come out. It comes out in a funny way, you know. It's like John Lydon, you know, Johnny Rotten. He was talking yesterday about. He wasn't necessarily saying that Donald Trump was good. He was just kind of recognising why people vote for him. And everybody was kind of piling onto him. And then you're like, hang on, his wife of 40 years has dementia and he has to look after her every day. That's the love of his life. And this woman doesn't even know who he is anymore. And so that might be affecting his mindset, what he's saying, you know. But... People aren't recognising that. They're just going, no, he's a prick. He's fucking this and he's that. And we need more empathy, don't we? I feel, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the real scary part of the way that we're living at the moment, isn't it? Is that lack of empathy and that need to place people in one category or another and not, you know, and yeah, likewise, like this, everybody can... blame. I watched a really interesting thing this morning about kind of the need to blame Donald Trump for everything and this thing that we've got of just going, well, he's the evil one. As soon as we've got rid of him, like, that's the focus. And it's like, actually, there's a whole lot of people out there who feel the same way. And so we do need to start empathizing and understanding why we've got to this point and how where the common ground is.
Exactly. Yeah, what's created this? What has led people to that place? You know, but you're not allowed to have these conversations. You either stand there with everybody else and going, they're all stupid. None of them know what they're doing, or you just get lumped in with them. You know, everybody wants to shout and scream and fuck each other off, and we don't get anywhere like that. You know, I'm not sticking up for Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump's awful. And yes, there are some people that support him that are also awful. But they're a product of something. And so where did that come from? And talking to each other, being more understanding, like you've said, is the way forward rather than just cutting everybody off and going, no, you're an evil sack of shit. I'm not going to talk to you. But this is, it just, you know, I don't know. I get caught up in all this. I just stand there sometimes and... I just look at everyone shouting and I'm like, stop shouting at each other. The world's fucked. Don't worry, this is just a little bit. The actual world that we live on is fucked. So why aren't we all coming together and going, right, we need to work together now to make sure this isn't fucked, you know? But we're not. We're all just fighting over little bits and having a go. And I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I have no answers for that. No answers at all. Let's get back to your book now. Because we could be all day fucking talking about all that. This is going to be an obvious question, but where did the idea come from?
So the book is about, it's about a little boy called Billy Plimpton who wants to be a stand-up comedian, and he doesn't think he's going to be able to do that because he's got a stammer. So he's basically, the story of the book is how he thinks he needs to change himself and get rid of his stammer, and then he can go on and be the person he wants to be. And obviously, all of that doesn't quite go to plan for him, and he realises that maybe he doesn't need to change himself quite as much as he thought. And the idea came from, so my son has got a stammer.
Okay.
And he's had it for a long time, long, long time, ever since he could speak, really. And at first we didn't realise, it was just cute, and, you know, it was just like the way that he was when he was little, like, oh, he's just got so much to say and you know. And then it kind of started coming out more and more, and he started finding it really challenging. And at school, I suppose, the minute you hit a certain age when you've got something that sets you apart from the other kids, that's, you know, that's a yeah. big deal, isn't it? And so it built and built, and the more that it became a big deal, the more difficulty he found getting his words out. And so it's like that cycle of, and it comes and goes. So it got to a point where we've been to a couple of speech therapists, and it comes and goes now. He started finding his confidence a little bit, and he started finding ways of, at first he was kind of joking, and that's where it started. That's where loads of the ideas in the book have come directly from our experience. But yeah, he started yeah. joking about it, in a way to make other people feel comfortable, right, I guess, yeah. and to kind of put people at ease. And then he was experimenting with how to tell people and how to tell them what the best way of dealing with it is when he's talking to them. And so basically after last Edinburgh, when we got back from doing that show, the kids went back to school. Rob went off on tour, stand up, and I was in the house on my own with the dogs like, oh no, I've not planned anything. What am I going to do? No, like I forgot that yeah. I actually had a life after Edinburgh. And then this idea popped up. Leonard had been playing ping pong with this boy, with this kid in the village who's deaf. And I started sitting there thinking about how this deaf kid who lip reads would be able to lip read Lenny, who stammers. Oh, yeah. And I started thinking about how that friendship could actually exist. And then I was like, oh, there's a story yeah. in there somewhere. And then I realised it wasn't a play. I've only ever written plays and stuff for me to perform, really, in the past. And I was like, that's not a play. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Mm. I was like, oh, my God, it's a kid's book. I've got to write a kid's book. And so, yeah, because I had the time and the space.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was perfect, really. And I just absolutely fell in love with writing for that age group. I just love it so much.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And it's funny his outlook on his stammer was to make other people more comfortable. And I read the bit when it said there are different people. There's the people that wait and let you finish, and there's the other people that try and fill in the gaps. They try and guess what you're gonna say. And it was really interesting because I'm like, oh yeah, there's a couple of people I know that have got a stammer. And initially, when you first meet someone like that, you're not doing it because you're a prick. You're trying to help them along. And you go, oh, is this what you mean? Is that what you mean? But now I kind of, yeah, I wait. I'm like, yeah, just, you know, they'll get there. You know, and you just sort of stand there. And Scroobius Pip, he's got a stammer. And I didn't realise that because he does all this spoken word and rapping and all that. He's had massive records out. And then when I met him and he's like, and he talked about it on the, when he came on, he was like, yeah, and he's talking about his stammer. You're like, wow, how did it not come out when you were singing? You know, it's fascinating. And with Lenny, does he know? I suppose you don't know. Like you see, don't know where it comes from. It just sort of happened.
Yeah, they don't know much about it, actually. It's yeah. a really fascinating thing. I mean, his granddad had a stammer, so they do think it sometimes runs in families. Mm. But yeah, they really, really don't know. It's quite an interesting thing, and it can vanish for quite a long time.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, it's just it comes out in that way instead of, you know, some people might, if their tank gets full, they might end up not being able to sleep, or they might end up something coming out in another physical way.
Yeah.
But with Len, it's just it comes out in that way. It comes out in a stammer. But yeah, it's interesting actually. Scroobius Pip's really brilliant. He's so great. He talks a lot about his stammer. He really gets it out there. It's brilliant. And yeah, that I think the journey that I've found quite interesting is Len, and with the book as well. Because Len started joking and had that feeling of, because he could sense that other people were uncomfortable and he didn't want that. At first, it was about making other people comfortable. And the same, I guess the same in the book is that Billy's trying to put people at ease by making them laugh. And I suppose that's the thing with a load of comics, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you want to make people feel comfortable, you want to make people like you, and you want, you know.
It's all about.
And so what was interesting is finding that balance, but also then pushing through that to the point where Billy with his stammer could not only make them feel comfortable and not only laugh about how he's talking, but also make them laugh just because he is who he is, and actually get beyond, because that's also what a lot of comics do, isn't it? Is take the piss out of themselves.
Yes.
And allow that to be the dynamic in the room. And everybody's kind of like, you're putting yourself on a low status.
Yeah.
And then you just sit there. But it's also about, yeah, you can put yourself on that low status, but you also want to raise yourself, be able to raise yourself up as well, and not just be in that bracket. So it was that, for me, it was having a character that maybe started off like that, but then realised, actually, I can tell jokes and not even mention my stammer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a nice bit, that bit at the end. I'm not going to spoil it. There's no spoilers. I just enjoyed the end. It was a nice feeling. It was a nice feel-good moment. That whole stuff with the show and the band, and it was really nice. And I've not felt that reading a book for a while. That really nice, it's a nice feeling. And were you aware of that as you were writing it? Did you feel all...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like a mess. Honestly, throughout writing, I'd be just sitting like... crying and then laughing as I'm typing. I went through all of the emotions as I was doing it. I had to... pull myself together quite a few times. I guess because it was personal as well.
Yeah.
There's loads of it, you know, was based on Lenny having to get up on stage and be in the school play and all of the emotions. I mean, it's already a bit when you're a parent and you see your kid doing something in front of an audience, it already takes you to that place, doesn't it? But when your kid's got a stammer, oh my God.
Yeah,
it's off the scale. So as I'm writing all of those scenes that, are all heightened and dramatised, and you can imagine the music in the background and all of that, it's quite filmic, isn't it? And so I was a wreck.
Well, as you're, and Lenny's helped you with the book, hasn't he?
Yeah, he was. I read out every chapter when I'd finished it. I read it out to him, and got his feedback, and just checked in, really, that loads of the factual stuff. So that bit that you were talking about categorize when the character categorizes everybody he meets into certain, how people react to him. Lenny loved that. He absolutely loved that. He was like, that's so true. That's so true. So, I just wanted him to kind of just, rubber stamp it and say, that is how I feel. And that's accurate. Yeah. And there were some bits that he was just like, nah, mommy, you can't say that. And certainly some words he was like, nobody says that anymore.
You got to watch that. But that's it. That's what it's almost like that beginning bit. When he's categorising the people, and that's almost like a help manual for other people that will read it and go, oh yeah, because no one tells you how to be. You're not a prick, and you want to help, and you don't know what to do, and so that'll really help people.
Many times, I think people don't even know what a stammer sounds like. So people might not have ever met somebody. So actually it takes you quite a long time into a conversation to understand what it is that you're hearing.
Yeah.
And so you can react accidentally in a way that's really not helpful or not nice before you even have clocked that it's a stammer. So actually I think, it's just getting a bit of awareness out there. And so people, if you'd read this book and you met somebody with a stammer, straight away you'd go, oh, that's like that kid. And this is what they would want me to do. They'd want me to wait and not interrupt or not try and help or not do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And certainly not to mimic them. I mean, the amount of people that I've heard, adults who I've heard mimic Lenny back to him.
What?
It's unbelievable. And they're not being mean. They're not doing it on purpose. I don't know what they're doing, but they don't know it's a stammer. They just think it's somebody who's getting stuck, and to try and pop the tension, just mimic him back to himself. It's so common.
Really? But that's what a weird thing. I suppose, again, it goes back to that thing. They're uncomfortable. They don't know what to do. Yeah. And the other thing is as well, I think a lot of people, when they're having conversations with people, they're not really listening to the other person. They're just waiting to say their bit. And so a lot of that, the patience isn't there, is it? Because they're really like, oh, get on with it. I want to say something. You know, and that's, And that, not even people with a stammer, that's just people in general. People need to be a bit more, there needs to be a bit more back and forth in conversations. Listen to what the person's actually saying. And then you can, and then rather than waiting, I've seen it with podcasts. I've seen it with interviewers where they're not really listening to the answers. They're just waiting to say the next question. And you just, you know, what's the point in this? No, you're not listening, you know. And that's with, I say this a lot on ears, like, you know, be, you know, you should, yes, you know, tell people how you're feeling. Say, look, I need to have a chat. I'm not feeling great. But, or if you say to someone, are you okay? Be prepared to listen to the answer, you know, when they, because they might turn around and actually tell you how they're feeling. Rather than, are you okay? Oh, good. No, I'm not feeling great, to be honest. And then you get on with your fucking story, you know. People need to listen a bit more, don't they?
Yeah.
I feel, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that it's so true. And anything that makes, I think, yeah, living with somebody with a stammer can definitely make you slow down and take that time and realise, yeah, how in a rush we are to get to our, just to get to our bit. It's like, what is wrong with us that it's all about grabbing the bits of time that it's like ownership, isn't it, of an idea, and you're just desperately trying to own the idea or own the bit of conversation that you feel like you've got a handle on, and it's quite depressing, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, just waiting to get your, just to say your bit, and you just, you know, yeah, we need to be, yeah, I know, I think people need to slow the fuck down. Just slow the fuck down a little bit, you know? Did it feel good, because you're an actor, did it feel good to get back into that sort of like creative, doing something creative, you know? Because I know when you become a mum, you know, you got Rob there as well, but mums seem to be more, it's your life is the kids, you know? Dad's around, of course he is, but it's all about the kids. And so you kind of, your acting, things like that kind of takes a back seat. You know, that's not me being sexist. That's just, it just seems to be what it's like. Did it feel good getting back into it?
It's absolutely the way it is for us. I mean, we've ended up, I don't know how it happened, but in quite traditional roles, really. I guess because I was acting. Rob's a bit older than me, obviously, which I mention to him all the time. But so he was slightly further ahead in his career when we met. And I was acting, I was doing, you know, I was a jobbing actress, but I wasn't earning that much money. And so when we had kids, it was clear, we didn't even need to discuss it really, that it was going to be my, it was going to be my career that took the hit, really. And, you know, there was a time where I kind of thought I might do both. I might just try and keep it going, but my heart wasn't in it at all. No. As soon as I had a baby, I was like, I don't want to be going into, schlepping into London to an advert casting with a baby and leaving a baby in the, you know, in the reception, asking some actor, can you watch the baby for 20 minutes when I go in and advertise this milk? It was just not for me. And I had a couple, actually, the first casting I did go to after I'd had my first baby, oh my gosh, I had anxiety in a way that I never, ever used to get nervous in auditions. And I had proper, like, sweats, panicky. You know how some people feel, I suppose, about the idea of getting on stage? Yeah, you know, rash coming up my neck and just, like, sweating and just couldn't cope with it at all. And I didn't know whether it was, I didn't know whether it was my hormones or whether it was because my role had shifted and I couldn't psychologically cope with putting myself back in that previous role when I don't know what it was, but it was very strong. It was quite a powerful reaction. And so I took a real back step from it all. Mm. And then it kind of around the same, I quit my agent, I quit acting altogether, really.
Yeah.
And then at the same time started writing. That was when I started writing.
Right.
And I wrote a show about motherhood. I did a comedy. I'd never done comedy before, but I did a comedy show with a friend of mine about being a new mum, about pregnancy, about being a new mum, to new mums with, they brought their babies in. And we did this show. I mean, it was ridiculous, but you know, it was what I needed at that point. I needed to be saying my own words rather than saying words that somebody else had written. It just did not interest me. So that was really good. And then we moved out of London. There was some struggle with identity during all that time. Before I wrote that first show and I'd kind of given up acting, I was in a bit of a land of, I'd really feel rootless and confused. I didn't know what, I didn't quite know who I was. Because, you know, when you would do a job that people are interested in, so in any conversation, they say, what do you do? And you say you're an actress. And they're like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
When you've not got that anymore and you're like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
And actually saying I'm a mum doesn't really cut it. And you don't really have the confidence to say that because, you know, nobody wants to listen to the fact you've been to a playgroup that morning. Or you know, nobody cares, but they care if you met so-and-so on a set.
That's it.
But they're not. So it was hard. I found it quite hard to just find my little route through it. But it was the writing definitely that got me through. And then, started writing all sorts of other stuff. And eventually really just got my confidence back and was like, yeah, no, this is good, actually. I feel like I've got a balance and I can be mum and be here for the kids all the time and didn't feel too, you know, there's still moments where I feel a little bit like, you know, when I'm writing and going, go and make some toast, you know, I don't care what you eat. There are moments where I feel slight guilt, mum guilt about that, but they're rare enough to not feel too, you know.
Yeah, it's not like they're eating out of the bin. Mum's busy. But that's good though that you found your own path, because a lot of resentment could have built up otherwise. I know that, you know, after a couple of years, you'd be like, fucking, I'm still doing this. And you're swanning around, you know, out there, staying away at weekends or dicking around with you. Because that's the other thing, is that you'd think there'd be that assumption that, say, Rob would just be off, just pissed all weekend, having the time of his life, and you're stuck at home, you know.
Oh, yeah, there's been my fair share of that, like, enjoy your fucking hotel with a weekend. And yeah, enjoy going and watching a film in the middle of the day. Like, just ridiculous. When he used to tell me what he used to get up to, I was just like, oh, my God, that is not work. That's not work.
Babe, I'm putting food on the table. I'm going to watch Star Wars at 3 p.m. I get it.
There were definite struggles in that department, definitely, and I had to rein in a lot of those feelings, because I did know that this was my choice. I wanted kids, and it was my choice, and so, but it doesn't. Telling yourself those things doesn't always help, does it? Sometimes you do just need a good old row.
Yeah.
You know, or you need to feel like it's unfair and say this is not fair. I feel like I've got the raw end of the deal. And then it changes and then it moves on and then you feel slightly differently the next week or the next year. And then the kids are older and you're like, oh, we got through that.
Yeah. Well, you see, it's that assumption that the feelings you're feeling at that time are the feelings you feel all the time. Like, there's other times when you'd be like, oh, he's away. Good. I can get on with some shit.
Oh, now I love it. Now I'm like, the house will be clean. I can, like, I've got my little routines going. He can go away and then I can enjoy it when he comes back. But, yeah, no, it's a different thing altogether. When the kids are older and he's away, you know, it still has, if he's away a lot, like he was away, he was down in London actually before lockdown.
Yeah.
He was away from January through till March. And that's a big stint, you know.
That's massive.
It's a big stint for the kids to deal with and for me to deal with, but it's a different set of feelings. It's not that same kind of raw when you've got babies and you're kind of, there's a wildness to your emotions when you're like in that kind of protective and the rage that you can feel if you feel slighted or like things aren't fair during that time.
Yeah.
Are very different to now. Now if I'm feeling like, oh God, you know, well, I'm on my own again. Now it's more like, oh, I just feel a bit lonely or a bit like Oh, well, it'd be nice if he was here, but he's not.
Yeah, I get it. I had that with my ex-wife. That was half the problem, is that I wasn't there. You know, I was in Australia and New Zealand for 2 months, and, you know, and that's all right for a bit, but then after a while, you're like, oh, I got married because I wanted to be with this person, and they're not here. And so, yeah, it's a problem. Yeah. I think that's the thing with comedians. I'm just speaking from my point of view. We get wrapped up in the business. We're kind of like, I've got to do this gig and I've got to do that gig. And now it's all been taken away. Now I'm like, you know what? I didn't have to leave that wedding early. I could have gone to the wedding and had a nice time, but I was too busy worrying that if I didn't go to this gig, I'd miss out on something. I'd definitely miss out on the money. But, you know, and I think that's what it was. It was like, shit, if I go to this wedding, that's going to cost me 250 quid and I can't afford that. But now I'm like, I got a bit wrapped up in it. So that's one positive.
It's such a mad,
yeah.
But it's a really difficult thing to have, be in a career that makes you monetize your social life in that way. Like, we do the exact same thing with all sorts of events. You're like, yeah, I know, but that's 250 quid.
Yeah.
And it's like, you start thinking about social events and how much they're worth to you financially. And it's like, that's a really unhelpful way to start thinking about, you know, because we do it all the time. I think all anyone in the arts has to, or anyone self-employed, I guess, has to think about that all the time. And because you're so worried about it being taken away from you, aren't you? There's always that in the back of your mind that you've got to keep going or else it might end. It might stop.
Yeah, exactly. And well, as it has, you kind of go, oh, shit. But yeah, that you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. It would be like, yeah, there's a wedding, but it's going to be this whole weekend. And it's going to be here, and, you know, my missus would be going, right, this is my friend and we have to be there. And you're like, yeah, but that's a lot of money. And then we've got to pay for hotels.
Yeah, and they're your friend. You know her more than me. I don't have to be there. You go. And then, and it's just awful, isn't it? It makes the whole thing, sucks the joy out of it. And God forbid you ever book a holiday, because then you're going to get that audition in, aren't you? Or that thing in that just happens. I mean... That was the day that I quit acting was when I was still feeding. I was still breastfeeding. And then the call came in for some kind of advert in Poland. I was going to have to be in Poland for 10 days.
Right.
And so I wouldn't have been able to feed Lenny. Like, and I was like, well, no, I'm feeding. So no, I'm not going to, of course I'm not going to do that. But my agent was like, yeah, but it's 25 grand.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, okay, is breastfeeding my first child worth 25 grand?
Yeah.
Like, what? And you start this awful, it's like somebody evil has got the strings here and has created the worst kind of would you rather.
Yes.
In the, like, it's a real life would you rather. Would you rather breastfeed your child or have £25,000 in your bank?
Yeah.
It was just too awful. I was like, it was emotionally, it was so awful. I'm like crying, going, I don't know, feeding him. Or like completely like mum hormone mad, just going, I don't know what to do. Like, so I said no, and then said, actually, I'm quitting.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm not doing it anymore. I can't have these decisions. I just can't cope with these kind of decisions anymore.
Yeah, it's not right, is it, that to put that pressure on you, especially when you're a new mum. You know, you're still going through changes, aren't you? You've created this life, and now you've got all these weird feelings. Well, you know, not weird feelings, but you've got, like, I need to protect and nurture this poor baby. And then you start going, yeah, but what about me? What do I want? And you've got all these changes to go through that us men just don't have. You know what I mean? We just go, well, I made that now. All right, I'll see you later. It's like, we don't go through the physical thing that I saw about this the other week with Kelly Ford about being a mum. And, you know, when a woman has a baby, you can see the difference in that person. They've given their life force to another human. And I don't think we talk about that enough. you know, that a woman does that. Men can do so much, but we don't physically have to give that energy to that other to another human being that mums do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, complete. It's the most intense set of feelings and situation to be in. And you know, I think men have something that takes longer and is more subtle, and the relationship that they form with their kids is a more kind of long term thing, isn't it? Whereas because physically you've gone through so much, it's a much more instantly, not necessarily always in it, you know, it's not always this kind of instant, oh my God, I would die for this child, and I'm now immediately like in love and in only having positive feelings. That's not clearly not always the case. But whatever the feelings are, they are so strong.
Yeah.
It's really overwhelming how strong they are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's that, and it takes ages to get over it, like to bring your energy levels back up, because you're just knackered. You've just pushed this kid out of you, and then your body has to rebuild and it has to reset itself, because you've been carrying this kid around for 9 months. And now it has to sort itself out, and it must be exhausting. Because then you've got to look after the child as well as your body going through the changes, like getting itself back to how it was before you had the kid. And I couldn't even begin to think what that must feel like to go through that shit.
Yeah, yeah, to deal with the fact that you are now a different human being,
yeah,
and you also have another human being, that it's a real, yeah, it's incredibly difficult. It's just difficult, I think. I mean, it was so much easier the second time with my daughter. Oh God, it was just a piece of piss compared to the first time, because I wasn't dealing with that huge shift, that you know, just that shift of identity. You just can't plan for it. So there's nothing you can do to actually protect yourself from the huge waves of shock and kind of just the feeling that you just don't know what you do. You don't know what's happening anymore. And so to ride that out until you kind of vaguely go, well, time's passed and I'm still here. And we're kind of we're doing it. So I must, you know.
Yeah.
And then it's like you're rebuilding yourself, but you without any sense of perspective.
Yeah.
And without any sleep.
That's what I know. It comes up all the time. People are talking about the sleep, but you don't. I was working two jobs when I had my first one, and then I was coming back, and then because the Lisa, the mother of my kids, was knackered because she's had him all day. She's like, you've got to have him. And I'm like, but I've got two jobs. And then we're arguing at 3 a.m. whose turn it is to feed him, because she didn't breastfeed either. It was all bottles. And then you go to the fridge and then you're like, oh, fuck, I forgot to make the bottles up. And then you're sitting at 3 a.m. counting the formula. He goes, was that one? Was that two? What did I put? Oh, fuck. I've never known tiredness like it.
Counting that formula, it's mad, isn't it? How you can't count to six, it's so mental. All of a sudden, you lose the ability. Like, I could have put 13 scoops in this. It could just be like clay. I don't know what I'm feeding the baby.
Exactly. And you're like, oh God. And you're just like, I'm never not gonna be tired ever again.
Yeah.
It's mad, isn't it? And then what's nice is they start to grow. And then I underestimated my sons. I'm just like, oh, they're my sons. I've still got to look out for them and look and do. And I was talking to my youngest, who's 23, and he was talking to Jade, and he just said, well, you know, the thing is with Dad, he sometimes you need someone to look after him a little bit. And I'm like, how the fuck do you know that? And it was
That's so nice, isn't it?
It was a nice moment. I'm like, oh, you are quite astute. You're not a kid anymore. You're a grown up. That's a nice feeling when they start to kind of
a grown up that can actually look after you and notice yeah, you and notice yeah, yeah, yeah. what you need. It's just gorgeous.
It's lovely. And it's nice to see that. That's so when you go through all that, all the stuff that the mum goes through and the tiredness and the dad, you know, dealing with it as well. And then but then you get to the point and then they've gone off into the world now and they're decent dudes. And people tell me that they're good lads. And you're like, oh, that's nice. It was worth it. You know, I don't know how you'd feel if you brought up a child and he was a wanker. Yeah, I went through all that and he's a fucking wanker.
Do you think that happens or do you think wankers are only born by wankers?
Probably. They're probably, yeah, wankers beget wankers. I don't know.
Surely, yeah. Surely. We've got to cling on to that, haven't we? I mean, oh my God, when I was pregnant with my daughter, I think it was, and I was overdue massively, I was horrible.
Right.
Just stomping around horrible. And I decided to go to the cinema on my own in the day. I'm taking myself off to a dark room, basically. And I had no idea what I was going to watch, and I had not heard of this film at the time. So I didn't know I didn't have any clue. So I went in and sit down and watch We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Oh, wow.
When I've got, like, I'm 2 weeks overdue with this human inside me that's moving around and kicking as I'm watching this thing that is all about how a decent human being can give birth to a monster.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, oh my God. And people are looking at me in the cinema, like looking at my bump, just thinking, what the hell are you doing here? This is not.
It's not for you.
This is not for you. The worst film choice ever.
You just stood there going, it could be a murderer. You go, all right, mate. You're ruining it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's what, when I was a teenager, I was quite problematic. Maybe that's what my mum and dad were just pissed off. They're like, we put that fucking effort in and now look at him smashing the place up. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, that's it, isn't it? Because it must be terrible. Like, I was a bit naughty and, you know, I had a bit of a phase of where I was just a bit rough and just not, you know, not making good choices and not being a nice person, really. And I always think, God, what, did my mum not notice? Or did she, like, because she wasn't that, maybe she just didn't care or didn't, but I just think now, if my kids were behaving like that, I'd be terrified that they weren't going to come back, that they weren't going to get back to the person that I know that they are or could be. And you just, but to have the confidence in yourself and what you've done, or the confidence in them that they're going to be okay and that they're going to get out of this phase, or that it even is a phase. I think it just, I'm quite nervous actually about, you know, because Lenny's nearly 13. And my daughter's younger, but I'm terrified already. I've got images of her, you know, dancing on the table and you know, it's going to be an absolutely terrifying experience parenting her as a teenager. But yeah, just I think having the confidence to ride it out and go, no, they're going to be okay. They're going to come back to the core person that they were when they were little.
Yeah.
They're allowed to change.
Yeah. I went through that. It seems to be more, especially with my youngest one, there was times I'm like, he just used to look at me with such disdain, and just it was a real that, because when he was little, when he was a child, and he was all like, I was his hero, and he was like, oh, Dad, I don't want to go home, I want to be here with you, and I want to do this and do that, and then he just became this absolute tosser. And then I'm like, I know it's just a phase, but I'm really struggling with it. What if this is him? And now he's. We chat every day. We send each other music, and he's now discovering the 80s, and he's sending me all this 80s music, and it's really nice. We have with both my sons, we've got this really nice relationship now. So yeah, like you're right. It's knowing that they're going to be all right. It's just they're just a bit pricky now.
Yeah, and not taking it personally. It's hard, isn't it? Not thinking that it is an attack on you, and that you need to respond still as a parent rather than an individual who feels, you know, wronged in some way.
I did that. I did that. I'm ashamed to say I did. I just stood there and I go, I don't know what to do with you. And I had him by his shirt. And I don't know, why are you doing this? And yeah, you forget. You go, hang on a minute. Don't do that. He's not that. There's something else going on. You've got to back off a little bit and be a dad. Yeah. You know, and I think that comes from, you know, our parents or my, you know, parents of my generation that had us, and they did take it personally a lot of the time. You know, I remember my dad, there was a phone lock on the phone with a dial phone, and I worked out that you could get it off with scissors. And so when he went out to work, I'd get it off and I'd use the phone. And then one day he came in and I'd forgotten to put the lock back on, but I left the scissors in the lock next to the phone. And he came in and it was like, he just saw that as a big fuck you and your telephone lock.
I've never heard of a telephone lock.
Yeah, it was this little padlock that you could put on the phone and stop it dialing. And I'd taken it off with scissors and forgot. And he went fucking mental. He genuinely took it like I'd gone, yeah, shove it, mate. I've done. And yeah, so I understand. I get it. Yeah, I get it. You've got to be more of a parent than a person.
Yeah, cut to when my two are in their teens and I'm just like screaming at telling them that they're, you know, it's easier said than done, isn't it? It's all well and good saying, you know, you've got to like maintain some, but when somebody's looking at you, like the other day I fell over in front of my daughter and it was raining. It was raining and it was dark.
Yeah.
And basically I was picking her up from her mate's house, and in front of her mate and her mate's mum, I fell over into a puddle hurt my knee. Like it was, you know, I felt old. I felt like my hip might go.
Yeah.
And I was just like getting up like, oh, no, it's fine. I'm fine. And then got in the car and my 8-year-old daughter looked at me and said, oh, mum, that was so embarrassing.
Oh, brutal.
So brutal. And she's normally so nice. I thought she was going to say, are you okay? Like, are you okay? Because, you know, she sits, she's like a nurse. She loves looking after you normally. But all of a sudden, when it was in front of that particular mate, that all went out the window and she was just humiliated by me.
Yeah, this is it now. She's on the turn. It's going to start.
God.
You have to write another book.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, mate. So when is the book out? Is it February it comes out?
So, yeah, you can pre-order it now. It's called The Boy Who Made Everyone Laugh. And it's available from everywhere to pre-order. But yeah, if it would come on the 3rd or the 4th. Oh my gosh, I should really know this by now.
It's all right.
This is good practice. Yeah, I think it's the 4th of February it comes out. So yeah, fingers crossed, bookshops will be open.
Brilliant. I'm sure. Well, and it's going to be available everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere, yeah. Everywhere. Yeah.
Lovely. And are you going to do an audio book? Don't know.
Yeah, there will be an audiobook. Yeah. I don't know who's going to do it, but there will be an audiobook.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. That's it's brilliant. And it's really nice that it, like you say, it shines a light on something that doesn't necessarily get spoken about, you know? Like I said to you at the beginning, explaining the different, when he categorises the different people, I think that really struck me as being really helpful.
Yeah, I hope is that... It's about something very specific, obviously, but I hope there's a universality about it because everybody struggles to feel like, you know, they have a voice, and everyone struggles to feel like they're happy with themselves and they won't want to change a bit of themselves. So I'm kind of hoping that, yeah, the stammer is the specific thing that he's going through and that, yeah, it'll be helpful for stammerers to feel like they are actually... You know, there's something out there that is about them.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was about, really. Like, Lenny had never, ever met anybody with a stammer, let alone read anything. So I was kind of writing it for him at first. That was the point of it. But yeah, but also any kid out there with any that feels different in any way should be able to relate.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I like. I don't know of many stories that have had the hero in it having a stammer. Or I think it's starting to happen now. There's more people that, you know, wheelchair users, and we're starting to do that. But we didn't have that growing up. Everybody was, you know, they had two arms, two legs, and they were white, you know, and it was all, that's what it was. So it's nice to see that it's all changing now. It's funny, I was doing a gig and there was a guy in a wheelchair, and he communicated by showing bits on, he had a book in front of him and he would just show you the words that he was trying to say to you. And I had this, it made me realise, I'm like, oh yeah, people, even though they're in a wheelchair and he can't communicate in the traditional sense, his brain is still there. He still knows what he wants to say. It's not, and it really made me realise that, yeah, you know, by talking about these things, it teaches us how we can still communicate and not make each other feel, you know, make each other more comfortable. And that's what I really got from your book as well. It's nice. Yeah, I think it's going to be great.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for reading it, especially because you're not a reader.
I love to read, but if it doesn't grab me straight away, it takes me ages. I'm like, I will get through this. Fuck.
Yeah, it's been set as homework.
Well, it's like, people go, oh, you must read War and Peace, or you must read this and that. You go, all right. And then you start, you go, oh, fuck, I've just got to get to the end. Just get through it. And then I forget what I've read. And then people go, what was it like? And I ever go, yeah, it was good. And now it's shit. But what happens? I fucking don't know. But your book was excellent and it stayed with me. And I'm really glad. Thank you for sending it to me. And as Father Ted said, good luck with the book. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much.
It's been lovely having you on, Helen. Can we find you on social media and things like that?
Yeah, Helen Rutter UK on Twitter. That's the main one. Yeah, I had to join. I never was on social media before. I haven't even got a smartphone, but they told me that was not the best way to sell books. So now I'm on it. Now I'm on it all.
You just start selling them at the end of your drive on a table.
Yeah, exactly.
And finally, I just want to ask you, I saw Rob posted the other day about you keep jumping out on him.
Oh, God. I know. I love it so much. It's so awful. It's so mean. But it makes me so happy.
Yeah.
What is it about making somebody jump? There's just something classic. It's the same as, you know, farts will always be funny.
Always.
Falling over is always kind of funny as long as somebody's not hurt themselves. And jumping out, it's particularly Rob, because I don't know. I can wait behind a door for a good 20 minutes because the build up and the joy within me knowing that it's going to be a good one, because he'll never expect it. It's awful. But he gets very cross with me. Very cross with me. He keeps telling me he's going to have a heart attack and it's all going to be my fault.
You're going to kill him. I did it to Jade once when we were first dating, and I went into the front door. I had a key. That was it. I got into her house. And I'm like, hello, hello. And then I heard the bath. And I'm like, oh, she's in the bath.
God, this sounds like a brutal one already.
So this is it. So I crept up the stairs and I went, wah! And Jade went, and started sobbing. She started sobbing in the bath. To the point, I went, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And she's like,
God.
Because it turns out, I didn't know this, one of Jade's biggest fears, he's getting murdered in the buff.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I need to stop doing it, don't I? That's awful. That's a really awful story.
It took ages for her to forgive me for that. It really shook her up. It was a...
Oh, my God. That's... No, I'm not... I mean, that...
Have
is,
fun.
No, but... I literally just, when he's gone to the toilet... Like, on his way out, I'll say boo. That's it. Like, it's not that kind of horror film level.
No. I learned a valuable lesson that day. anyway, Helen, thank you so much, mate. I've really enjoyed this. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me. It's lovely to talk to you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.